Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Good morning, Caffeinators. I hope everybody's well. It's Saturday morning. It's early here on the West Coast for me. It's about 8 a.m. Dave, I was saying before we came on the air that I think the cafe is going to have to start offering some breakfast sandwiches or coffee cake or something, some kind of breakfast menu. But how are you doing out there?
Doing good. It's not as warm as it is out in Southern California.
I
put this on your Facebook. I feel like you're just gloating that it's that warm out there. It's been cold and kind of rainy here in North Carolina, but, you know, not as bad as it was back when I lived up north. So I guess I need to count my blessings and say it's only 40s, not in the 20s.
Yeah. 95 in January, as it was yesterday, is a little much for me. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, it is wonderful that week in January when we get that and you can, like, go lay on the beach legitimately. Of course, not in the time of COVID. But it's just, I don't know. Like, now having been in New England the last few years, especially when it's this hot, boy, do I miss winter. But you know, like, I obviously there would be people that would love to switch places and be here in the warm sunshine at this time
of
year.
So, me.
So I won't complain too much. I'll try to figure out a way to enjoy
it. Never miss winter. never.
And, again, before we came on air, you were saying you're drinking hot coffee this morning, which might be the first time that I've known you. So what are you drinking?
So I am drinking, it's from Charleston Roasters in South Carolina. I bought it at the local grocery store, and it's called Kiowa Blend. So it's a dark roast, and when I read the name of it, I was like, sounds like it's probably Hawaiian, because Hawaiian is very popular for coffee. But then we looked it up, because I was trying to look up the spelling, and turns out it's an island off of the coast of South Carolina. So this is a South Carolina blend.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have a cup. Molly made a pot of, you know, we got some coffee from our favorite place that we like, which is Door County Coffee Company in Wisconsin. Yep. And this is the chocolate raspberry truffle blend. Ooh. And it's delicious. It's obviously sweet, but it is.
I love chocolate and raspberry, but when you combine it with coffee, I'm like, that just doesn't go.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. I certainly like it. So,
of course you do.
So we read, you know, kind of an interesting article this week, and it's one we've talked about to some degree previously, and this was just kind of a I don't want to say a new version of it, but it's a new article submitted by Ken Yagi and Mandy Foltz to Today's Veterinary Nurse called "Perspectives on the Creation of Advanced Veterinary Nurse Degrees." What'd you think?
Well, we talked about this previously. It's been probably
I want to say maybe we talked about it with Liza, but I can't recall.
I don't remember either. But you know, last year is such a blur. Last year took what, 3 years, 4 years,
basically,
5 years?
Yeah.
And it was proposed in, I forget which publication made this, about creating like a nurse practitioner that they have in the human field. Mm-hmm. And this is just kind of looking at advanced practice veterinary nursing degree. So saying that, you know, these people would work under a veterinarian, kind of like a nurse practitioner would. Mm-hmm. And some of this stuff is great. And I feel like this is something that can happen.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is something that is needed.
Yeah.
However,
right,
there's a lot of steps that we have to go through to get to this, to get to this point where we need this.
Right.
Getting through technician utilization. They mentioned the VNI in here a lot. Mm-hmm. They use the term nurse a lot because written by someone who's closely associated with the VNI.
Right.
So I feel like this is something that can happen and would be beneficial. Right. However, we're not ready for this yet.
Yeah, agreed.
In my opinion.
Agreed. When I, this is definitely something that I kind of like you, would believe in and would support. This is step 602 and we're on step 14.
Yeah, exactly.
But to that end, I don't want to, you know, completely discount it, because if you don't have long range goals like this, if you're not looking at setting, you know, if you're looking to do something just for the sake of this one particular thing, but not looking at what it can do or how it can impact you, you know, other things you can do 10, 20, 30 years from now, you know, then you're really short-sighted. And so if some of the things that they're trying to do with the VNI, you know, if this is kind of a subsidiary goal way down the line, then absolutely. And,
yeah,
you know, there was there's some interesting data they present here in the article, like a number of people that are interested in the concept or responded positively to it, about 80% out of a little over 700 respondents to the survey. You know, again, I think it's a really interesting idea. And, you know, it's another one of those things, though, that I think we need the support of veterinarians to make, to make happen.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is you look at that positive results of people that would be in support of this. When I look at that, I look at the other factors that are going on, like underutilization, lack of respect, lack of pay. Of course, yes, mm-hmm. You're going to say, do you want something that's going to make you more respected, get better pay, better utilization? Then heck yeah, I'm going to be for that. Yeah. However, we could probably address those issues of respect and utilization and pay on a more basic level before we go to something advanced like this.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like saying if you're working at some type of job and you haven't figured out the skills of doing that basic job, and then they say, well, would you like to just abandon this and do something way more advanced?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to do that?
Right.
If you're struggling at what you're doing, who wouldn't want something that's going to make you achieve all those goals without having to address the problems that you're having right now?
Right. And I did like, too, that they kind of presented some concerns, if you will. There was a quote in here. While there is significant interest for an APVN role, advanced practice veterinary nursing, from both veterinary technicians and veterinarians, there are also voices of concern. Common arguments against establishment of an advanced role include worries that the expansion of veterinary technician scope of practice will lead to competition with veterinarians for jobs, and mm-hmm. that veterinary mm-hmm. technicians are often underutilized and underrecognized in their current state, and that needs to be, you know, addressed prior to the expansion of scope of practice, like you're saying. So, you know, it's nice that I think that they recognize that while in theory, like, this is a wonderful idea, and we just have a lot to figure out before, we get there. But again, you know, this is a group of people that are working towards, you know, one avenue to try to figure some of that stuff out. So,
So I
love the idea of having some long range goals and interests like that, because,
well, and just generating discussion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but, what do you think? Should we get started? We have a guest here today that might actually have, you know,
Some opinions on this. Yeah.
Yeah. On this as well. So let's go ahead and bring out, I'm super excited today.
Me too.
We have Rebecca Rose, coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today. She's a CVT and a certified career coach. She cares about and understands veterinary teams, and that's a huge focus of what her career is. She graduated from Colorado Mountain College in Glenwood Springs with a degree in veterinary technology, and she is the president and founder of Catalyst Veterinary Professional Coaches. She's worked as a veterinary technician in mixed animal, was the first paid administrator to the Colorado Association for Certified Veterinary Technicians, which is super cool. We've both been very interested in association work, so that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And she's done relief technician work, all kinds of things. Very, very active with the CACVT and NAVTA, presents at a lot of local meetings. And she has a book called Career Choices for Veterinary Technicians, originally published in 2009 by AHA, and is in the process with the help of some wonderful colleagues to reprise it and come out with a new edition. So we'll talk about that a little bit. But the biggest thing is she just loves to help veterinary teams thrive. And Dave, when I think about when I went through school and I taught and you were an educator, some of this stuff, career coaching and all that, didn't exist. And like, this is a huge benefit for veterinary technicians, you know, so I'm super excited to talk about it. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today. What can we get you for a cup of coffee?
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I'm going to go with that chocolate raspberry
oh, boy.
Coffee.
I'm outnumbered. All right.
A white mocha cream.
All right. We can make that happen. We can make that happen. My wife definitely has the creamer, so we can get that going. If you don't mind, take us take a few minutes and take us through your career path, because you know, we always find that everybody that we talk to seems to have a bit of a long and winding road to kind of get to the area of focus that they're in, and I'd love to hear what transpired throughout to kind of get you focused on looking at veterinary teams. So just take us through your career path a little bit.
Sure. And it is definitely a long and winding road. coming from the mixed animal practice, I'm considered long in the tooth, meaning I've started working within a veterinary hospital in rural Colorado when I was a teenager, as many of us do. So when we consider that I've been working in a veterinary hospital since I was 16 and I graduated from Colorado Mountain College in 1987, you guys can do the math. That is
yeah.
a lot of toes and hand fingers. I'm pushing 35 years in this community.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Wow.
Yeah, and I love it as much as I do now, probably even more so than when I was 16 and 17, with the vision of becoming a veterinary technician. To be a veterinarian was never on my radar. Plus, the veterinarians I was working for at the time in the early 80s, they were on call for a week at a time, and I was like, that is no life for me.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the biggest deterrents of me not becoming a veterinarian. I always wanted to be their heart and their hands and provide that TLC to the pets, knowing too that it was also very much based in the client service. I worked in a small rural town as a waitress earlier in my life, so I knew the majority of the community even before I started working at veterinary technician in Town and Country Animal Hospital. So for me, the passion has always been with the people, with the clients, and with the team members, obviously for the pets as well, but I've always been an advocate for our veterinary teams. I did work in rural Colorado, mixed animal practice, for over 13 years. That one statistic blows the current statistics out of the water.
Right.
I loved working there, and my veterinarians were very engaged in organized medicine. Dr. Schick in the late 90s was the state board president. Dr. Noon was stepping into the presidency of the CVMA. Dr. Schick had been in the CVMA president as well. So that conversation was always occurring within our veterinary practice, even in rural Colorado, 4 hours from Denver, where they had to go for their meetings.
You know, back,
this is when people were faxing people.
I don't think a lot of people know what faxes are.
No, it's true. So, you know, the communications in that, but that was a big part of our culture within that veterinary hospital was leadership. And so I knew upon graduation from Colorado Mountain College in 1987 that there was opportunities to be a leader. The Colorado Association of Certified Veterinary Technicians was driven by volunteers, which the majority of our technician associations are. I have a unique background too, is that when my children were babies, and this happens to a number of veterinary technicians, my CE lapsed. So because my CE lapsed, I was still keeping up, but I wasn't tracking it. I wasn't going, you know, I wasn't working in the veterinary hospital. I stayed home to be with my two little children, who are now in their 30s, to keep things in perspective. But when I chose to go back to Town and Country because I so missed it, Dr. Schick hired me 5 different times.
As long as he didn't fire you 5 different times.
Right.
No, I always walked away, and he always knew that I was growing in between. So that was the big part. So when my CE lapsed, I went to Dr. Schick, and I said, Dr. Schick, I want to retest. I want to become credentialed again, because the first test was not associated with a VTNE.
Okay.
So 10 years later, in 1997, I retested and became a credentialed veterinary technician. I say I've been credentialed the whole time because it's just easier. You know,
sure.
3 years out of that, no big deal. But I encourage, and I see people in social media threads that say, oh, I've got a test, I'm never going to be able to pass it, yada, yada, yada. And I say, talk to the hand, people. You can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can do it, especially
absolutely.
If you've been in practice for a period of time. Now you have all of the hands-on experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you took the test, for the most part, out of school, you had the book learning.
Yeah.
Which was great, and I think that's essential. But now you have all of this experience to add to that. And to be perfectly honest, I knew what my test score was from 1987, and I tested higher in 1997, 10 yeah. years later. But I also set myself up on a study schedule, and I included my team in on it. I asked Dr. Schick to pay for it. He said, okay, but you have to stick with me for 3 years. I was like, not a problem. You know, so I signed a little piece of paper that said, yeah, he's going to pay for me to travel to Denver and put me in the hotel, pay for my credential, the testing. And I did. I stayed actually that stint until 2000. So that's when I started becoming very active in the Colorado Association of Certified Veterinary Technicians. I started coordinating their continuing education in 1998, that year following me becoming credentialed. And then in 1999, the Technician Association and the Veterinary Medical Association wanted to hire a part-time person. I didn't know anything about managing an association. I only knew how to create cards on a computer for my children. but I knew I had the tenacity, the desire, the connections, the network, the ability to make whatever needed to happen for our technician association to go from 900 people and a small handful of volunteers that were burning out. How many times have you heard that conversation?
Oof, too many.
Yeah.
I was the only one that applied. That's why I got the job. I didn't even learn that until years later. But it was a most wonderful, wonderful experience. I learned so much. I networked so much. Ralph Johnson was the amazing executive director of the Colorado Veterinary Medical Association at the time, still a dear friend, mentor, colleague, love him to pieces. And we can talk about all these kinds of stories. I have great stories. But within that first 10 days to 2 weeks, he brought me in his office and he showed me the most utmost respect. And I hold that respect for the people I speak with when I'm coaching them as well, saying, I'm here for you. This is your time. And it comes from that moment in time with Ralph.
Gotcha.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Mm.
So that takes us up to 2001.
Oh, boy.
When I was working for those organizations, that's when I learned there were so many opportunities for veterinary technicians in veterinary hospitals and beyond. That's when I started learning about veterinary pet insurance, and we were networking with AHA. I have always been a relationship builder. That's part of, I'm that maven. Mm-hmm. Didn't know that until I started reading all these books. I was like, oh, that's me. But even when I was working with Ralph, I said, Ralph, do you realize AHA's here?
Oh,
I think
yeah.
we need to have a state board meeting. I want to go meet all these people. And he's like, okay, Rebecca, you schedule those meetings, and on once a month, we'll either go to those locations or they will come here to our office. So I planned field trips all the time. Isn't that cool?
To go meet with all of these associations. Yeah.
Yeah.
And prior to that, even the Veterinary Medical Association really hadn't had a relationship with the state board. They tend to kind of hold their own different little silos. But through that networking and Ralph's wonderful ability to continue to build these relationships, I've been attending state board meetings in the state of Colorado about 3 times a year ever since.
Yeah.
They're so valuable.
Yeah, they really are. And it's hard to get people to go to them, but and I understand why, but it is, I mean, that's where all the groundwork is laid for the profession.
Yeah, and so few people, veterinarians and technicians, even understand how the law governs what we do within veterinary medicine. So that's when I realized there's so many places and so many opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
right? Even the conversation too about the advanced piece. I have so many questions about that. But that's all based in how does that fit and plug into the law? If that were to be that kind of a position. Right. Anyway, I got lots of questions about that. In one of those questions you asked, what would you suggest for technicians to do to elevate their career? I suggest step into leadership, stretch yourself, participate in these conversations. And you don't have to be the president. You don't have to do that right away. But maybe start with the CE committee like I did and network, because that's when you get outside of your little box within your veterinary hospital. It opens up and takes away those blinders. And through networking, which I'm really, really good at, you get to see there's so many opportunities and asking those questions and learning what people are doing. And plus learning that you are not alone. You are not the only one that feels underprivileged, underpaid, undermanaged, you know, all of this goes on, and you realize, oh, I'm not the only one. I'm not living in a silo, and there's other people that are having these, and that's when the solutions happen. That's when you can find those solutions.
Right, right, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so where did Catalyst come from?
Okay. I worked for Veterinary Pet Insurance as an independent contractor for over 10 years. One of their first field educators in 2004. I was working back at a little veterinary hospital in Gunnison at Tamichi Pet Care Center as their office manager and technician. And I just wasn't feeling fulfilled. I was like, I know there's this big, wonderful, awesome world out there for me, and I want to tap into it. So I actually just kind of opened that up to the universe and said, from my little itty bitty town in rural Colorado, 4 hours from anything, I said, I want to have a corporate job. I want to work for a big company. And the next, like within the next weekend, I went to a Colorado Veterinary Medical Association gathering, and Dr. Jim Wilson was a presenter. And after his presentation on pet insurance and how team members and veterinarians accepting and understanding pet insurance will thrive, it's like, wow, what a concept. Oh my gosh, just through pet insurance. And I'm standing at the social event sharing cocktails, and I introduced myself, and he asked what I do. I said, I'm a veterinary technician. He said, VPI is hiring. I said, I'm going to apply. And I did. And again, I knew nothing. That's the other point here, folks, is you don't have to know all of this. And women are really at a disadvantage of this. So when you see something that you want, and you know you have the desire, the drive, the passion to bring it to fruition, follow it, do it. We shoot ourselves in the foot over and over and over again. I'm not good enough. I don't have the degree. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't articulate myself well. You guys, I have a speech impediment and I'm dyslexic, and I still overcome all of these things.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. It can be done.
It can be done if within your heart and within your gut and within the confidence that you build up for yourself. Nobody else can build that confidence for you. You can achieve anything you want to.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah.
So I did work for VPI for 10 years. And within that period of time, I wrote the first career choices for veterinary technicians. And Dr. Carol McConnell was so wonderful in supporting me with that. I worked part-time for her and traveled all over the United States, literally, physically. I would go into over 300, sometimes 400 veterinary hospitals a year in presentations even. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Wow. So where are you working now? What are you doing right now?
Thank you for bringing me back to Catalyst.
That's okay.
I appreciate that. So when I saw VPI going away, they were transitioning from field educators to a different role. I was like, okay, Rebecca, here you are. This was in 2014, but I said, what is it that you really, truly want to do? What are you truly, truly passionate about? And I've been always passionate about growing veterinary teams, the whole team, everybody on the team. Even when I worked at Town and Country Animal Hospital, I was the one putting together the employee handbooks, putting back together the training. That was just even in the early 90s. And so I originally created Catalyst to bring together all of my wonderful VTS folks. I had Mary Berg, David Liss, our dear friend Kim Speltz, and some other wonderful veterinary technicians that do incredible teaching and educating and elevating. And so I wanted them to be able to go into veterinary practices and teach the team in their veterinary hospital. And we did that for probably 2.5 years. And the wall that I always was bumped against, because you have to value what it is you're doing. You have to be marketing that. You have to be able to prove the ROI on that.
Yeah.
Well, the managers would come to me and say, Rebecca, my team is such in flux. There's no reason why I should do that. There's no ROI to teach a team that in 2 years is going to be a new team. And I was just like, oh my God, that just hurt so much.
Yeah.
It hurt so much.
Yeah. But in this current climate, that is the reality, right?
It's
where, you know, we talk about the lifespan of a technician is 5 to 7 years. And, and not only that, but like, what's the lifespan of a technician at a practice?
Well, that's it.
I don't think that's 5 to 7 years. That's probably closer to 1 to 2 years, right? So
I love being, I'm a visionary, folks. I love to be as big and broad and bold and as insightful and as audacious as it gets. I really do. I want all veterinary team members to have a passionate, successful, fulfilling, sustainable career. Is that too much to ask?
No, not at all.
Not at all. But when we're looking at team members and when we're looking at the turnover within a practice, the annual turnover within a practice can be anywhere from, some of them will say 20%, probably because they haven't probably done the calculations right, but it could be 50, 60, 70% turnover. I'm really proud of Banfield for recognizing that when they elevated their team and they gave good CE and they gave them a raise, they brought their turnover from something like 39% to 19%. Halle friggin' hallelujah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you invest in your people, even just a little bit, I don't feel like veterinary technicians are a greedy group. A little bit goes a long way.
Yeah, that's true.
Gentlemen, utilization is not rocket science.
Right.
No, it really isn't.
It's no, for sure not. Yeah, yeah.
And that's where my passion lies. The first time I gave a utilization program was at the Ohio Veterinary Medical Association. It was in 2001.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
So this is not a new topic, right?
No, it's not. But because management shifts, and actually management is getting better. Managements are staying in place longer. And yes, the veterinarians need to know how they utilize their team, and I'm going to argue that your managers need to utilize your team. So remember, I started working as a technician in 1987. Veterinarians owned the practice and did all of the management.
Yeah.
Then we started having shifts. I'm happy to see that we have so many veterinary hospital managers, veterinary leaders in that aspect of our practices. And that's where the attention lies in how do you properly manage and utilize your team from management. You can find quotes from me within AVMA Journal saying veterinary teams are undermanaged and underled. That is our biggest problem. That is the focus that has to be managed in order for there to be longevity, prosperity, success, engagement. You can stop me anytime. This can go on and on and on. But that's the crutch of it. So you asked me in one of your questions, what would you do? What would I do? I would wave my magic Cinderella sparkly wand on practice managers and people with those roles in leadership and let them see, wow, this is how I utilize my team. Everyone on my team, my veterinarians diagnose, prognose, and set those treatment plans and the surgery, and everybody else does what they can within their scope of practice, within their passions, within their education, and within their skill sets that we continue to drive and grow within our practice.
And when you think about that, you know, you mentioned the management aspect of it. And as I'm thinking about tech utilization, I kind of put the blame on, I don't want to say blame, that's probably not the right word, but I put more responsibility on the doctors, because the doctors are the ones that are ordering things to say, this one needs X, Y, and Z. And it's not the managers that are there saying, okay, Dave, you do X, Y, Jeff, you do Z. It's the doctor saying, this needs to get done. And sometimes I put that on the doctors to say, well, if you're not letting me do this, then I'm not going to go to management and tattle and say, Dr. So-and-so is not letting me do what I need to do.
Doctors are not taught from veterinary school how to properly leverage their teams. So I'm going to even take my magic fairy wand and sprinkle dust all over the curriculum of veterinary colleges and explain to them. And thankfully I have gone into a few VBMAs, and those students are eager to hear how do they leverage their teams. Yeah. But they are not exposed to that. Matter of fact, the way it's designed, they come out as glorified technicians, mm-hmm. except for the few that do have technicians within their curriculum. I love it when a university is paralleled and integrated with a technician program.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have high hopes that that does support both of those careers in a valid way, but that's so few.
Right.
So like I said, I've been talking technician utilization for 20 years now.
Yeah.
I got a lot of ideas.
I don't want to say we're going about this the wrong way, but like we've said on the podcast before, and you're saying now, we need to get into the schools and say, hey, this is how we tackle tech utilization, is we teach it in the school so that they know that that's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, I think about my time at Tufts, and as you said, Dave, I've said this before, like, sure, we were preparing these graduating veterinarians medically to be veterinarians, but we certainly, I don't feel like we're doing a good job preparing them to be part of the veterinary team. Like, when we didn't prepare them for individual roles in the hospital. I mean, for crying out loud, every outside phone call that came to Tufts University rung in the ER. It didn't ring at the front desk where the customer service representatives would answer. It rang in the ER, and the veterinary students or the interns or the residents or whoever, faculty even, answered the phone. Like, that is not how a hospital functions.
No.
Yeah, and on our side too, Rebecca, a question for you. When I think about, Dave and I both taught veterinary technician education for a while, and I can even think the program that I taught at, you know, we taught certainly all of the curriculum and all of the anatomy and physiology and all of those things, but we didn't really talk about, at least in the program I taught, how to integrate into a team and, like, you know, mm-hmm. staff roles and all of the mm-hmm. and all of these things, and honestly too, what to look for mm-hmm. as a veterinary technician going out into the workforce, and like, what job is a good fit and all of those kind of things. Like, for new technicians that are trying to find their path, what kind of recommendations might you have?
Well, I think that's absolutely right, is determining where they want to work and even how much money they want, what is the value that they hold, and even start thinking about what it is, how they want to advance within that career, within that veterinary hospital. So I do have the opportunity to speak with veterinary technicians and veterinary students, thankfully. I love that. And I do have red flags and green flags for interviewing, or even looking up what to do. And there's an article too in Veterinary Practice News. So I do a lot of writing and I do a lot of presenting. And I that's another thing that I love to do. Within Veterinary Practice News, there's a whole article on the ideal clinic, because most often it's like, I just want a job. I don't care what the culture's like. I don't care whether I'm going to be utilized or not. I just need a job. And it's like, oh, that's the worst way to approach getting a good place.
Right.
The best way to approach it is, where do I want to live? What kind of culture do I want to be in? How often do we communicate as a team? Will I have regular performance reviews? Will I have goal setting? Will the veterinarian be hiring me? Red flag. Or am I going through a process that's been created by the practice manager? green flag. Mm. And will I have onboarding? Will I have any training whatsoever? Will I be thrown to the wolves right away? Do they have a professional mantra? What kind of reviews are they getting on their Facebook page? On the website, are the veterinary teams shown respect by, here is the doctors, here's their bio. Here's our credentialed veterinary technician, here's her bio. Here's our receptionist, here's her bio. Here's our practice manager, right? Even those are green flags.
Yeah.
If you look at a practice, or if you look at a website and it's now June and they still have their Christmas holiday hours up, that's a red flag.
Yeah. It's something you wouldn't think about, but it's something you do need to identify. Yeah.
I often look at websites, and you know, I go through, because I'm doing relief work now, so I always want to see who I'm working with. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is a red flag or not, but when I go through the hospital's website, usually they have a team section, and mm-hmm. usually they list the doctors. And for me, if I don't see technicians listed, that yeah. tells me that they haven't been there long enough, or mm-hmm. they just don't value them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's right or not, but that in my mind, that's what I think.
Absolutely. I'm giving you a gold star on that one.
Sweet.
Gold star, it. Sweetheart.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I have the wonderful opportunity to work within the veterinary industry. However, I look outside of the veterinary industry for a lot of opportunities for how can we integrate what other industries are doing into us. And we're not early adapters for the most part. It takes our veterinary community a while to adjust. Now, COVID was an opportunity where there had to be rapid adjustments and rapid manipulation or transitioning because of mandates. And some veterinary hospitals obviously did better than other veterinary hospitals. I think they're still trying to morph. What does that look like within their practice?
Yeah. With your book that you're working on, so the Career Choices for Veterinary Technicians, and you had a first edition, and you're bringing new life into it and working on a new new version of it. You know, again, thinking about that veterinary technician student that's graduating school, or as Dave and I have said previously, you know, we hit a point, you know, almost at the same time, and I know many of our colleagues have been through this as well, where we were kind of in a rut. What do I do mm-hmm. next with my career? Like, whether you're tired of the clinic, or you're this or you're that, what kind of resources or ideas or recommendations or things like that, or would a veterinary technician find in your book?
The first thing I ask them to do is a self-assessment. And,
okay.
And everybody wants to go, oh, no way, a self-assessment? No, I just want to skip that part. It's kind of like creating values, vision, and mission. No, I don't need to do that. I'm like, yeah, if you're working with me, that's where we're starting. We're starting with personal values. What is it that you value about your life? What is it that you value about your career? What drives you? What brings you great passion? What brings you joy? Let's start with those conversations. And around that, then we're going to create a path. Even when the book was created the first time around, it's like, it's okay. I personally want people to stay within their veterinary hospitals, feel supported, feel loved, feel appreciated, feel leveraged there. I want them to grow and be happy within our veterinary hospitals. That's where the majority of our teams are.
Yeah.
And if that's truly not working for you, and you have tapped out all of your resources, you've been able to have those difficult conversations, you've been talking with your practice manager, having that courageous conversation, and you have a culture that aligns with your values, then let's stay there and let's work it through and let's keep you there.
Yeah.
But if there's things there that's not working for you, well, yeah, then let's move on.
Yeah.
So self-assessment, you got to start there. And you need to identify your personal values, the vision you have for your career, and the mission. How are you going to achieve that every day? When I first started doing values, vision, and missions with teams or individuals, I could see they were like, well, that's so corporate. That's so cold. That just is not me. Yet when we did those powerful, reflective, internal work and exercises, that's when we started to blossom, because they knew what did drive them. Those were their guiding principles in finding or creating the job that, of their dreams where they are. Hallelujah. Let's do that. Let's keep them in those practices. They were able to articulate and express their needs with those practice managers that saw their value and return on investment. Maybe they do want to become a veterinary technician specialist, and people say, oh, my practice manager will never let me do that. I'm like, have you asked? No, I couldn't ever talk to her. I don't like her. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
People don't leave practices. People leave bosses.
Yeah, it's true.
Very true. So let's really find what makes you tick and where you want to go with it. And do you want to stay in veterinary hospitals? Oh my gosh. We have so many opportunities, even more so than 10 years ago. Right now, through COVID, matter of fact, I'm working on an article right now saying the new surprising careers of COVID. What has that done and shifted within our practices? Oh, or within our community? Yeah. Huge.
Huge. Huge.
Huge. There's another great statistic that Matt Saloy threw out there. He put it in an article about right now the sweet spot for a doctor to team ratio is 1-6. That's incredible. But again, what we're doing here is increasing that demand for an already small pool of credentialed veterinary technicians. Our credentialed veterinary technicians have 5, 6, 7 jobs available to them, each one of them.
Yeah.
It's what they want to do with their career at this point in time.
Right.
And I'm happy to help them find that. But what we're seeing is the demand for credentialed veterinary technicians specifically is growing so fast. You know, 2 years ago, we weren't graduating enough technicians. This year, we're triply not graduating enough credentialed veterinary technicians that take the test and hold their credential.
Right.
Can you tell I'm passionate about this?
Of course, yeah.
And
that's what we love
teams.
About it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
When you're talking about career choices, like what types of, I don't want to use the word jobs because I love that you're using the term career instead of jobs. What types of positions are you looking at? Are you looking at in different hospitals? Are you looking at moving into a different, completely different section of the field, like moving from small animal to large animal? Are you talking about lab animal? What types of career options are there out there for technicians?
All of it.
All of it.
All right. So let's talk about that.
Sure.
I do believe that upon graduating, whether that's a veterinary assistant or a veterinary technician, I really would prefer that they find a well-managed, great culture veterinary hospital to work in. That in and of itself is quite a feat. Not that they don't exist, but fully defining what does that mean for you? Because it means different things to different people. But working in that well-managed practice that has a budget, that does leverage their veterinary technician, that does allow for CE, does have benefits, does communicate, even through COVID, had team meetings. Yay, those are all positive things. Work there. Hone your skills. Become a client educator, which people don't even realize what I have to educate clients. Yeah, 70% of your day is going to be educating
yeah,
clients.
Exactly.
And oh, by the way, you don't just deal with pets all day, cattle, horses, pigs, cats, dogs. You have a team. So let's really focus on our communications, our ability to interact, our ability to improve our emotional intelligence the first 2 to 3 years. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then from that point, find a career coach or find a mentor or find another person within the veterinary community, maybe even within that veterinary hospital, that can help you define a path. Unfortunately, not all practice managers realize all the things that you can do within your practice. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you have to be able to say, oh, I spoke with a veterinary technician that works in a veterinary hospital on the other side of town or in the other part of the state, and this is what she's doing in her career. Can I do that here? And this is what it looks like. That's how we keep people in the career, in their veterinary hospitals longer.
Yeah.
Is by setting those career goals, having a practice manager that knows and sees the value of that, and then grooming them and supporting them and helping them achieve that goal within their practice. So turnover is not 30, 60, 80% within that practice.
Yeah.
So 2 to 3 years within a practice, and then start growing, start checking it out, start networking, seeing what other opportunities can you do, and knowing what brings you the joy. If a hit by car or a C-section on a cow floats your boat and raises your adrenaline, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, we're always, I mean, you're talking to two ECC techs. We're always promoting for people to go into the ER field because,
you know,
we're stuck not having enough people to work for us in the ECC field, as I'm assuming in general practice that's the same situation.
Oh,
so
yeah.
And then if so, you know, socializing kittens and puppies brings you great joy, great. Create a monthly socialization with puppies.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good idea.
Just throwing out some of my all-time favorites. If you do enjoy educating and you do enjoy onboarding and training team members, become that trainer. Take on that role within your practice. If you feel it's important that there's team safety, become the OSHA coordinator. And the list goes on within veterinary practices. Coming back to that idea that we aren't tapping and utilizing our technicians, our credentialed technicians within the practices that we have. Let's everybody get a A or B rating in utilizing your team within your practice. And then let's consider a physician's assistant or a veterinary physician's assistant. Right now, Ken put together a webinar for the AVMA and it's on Axon and it's on utilization. And they came up with this awesome tool that helps our teams identify how are we utilizing our team? How are we utilizing specifically our credentialed veterinary technician? And what we're learning is that they're getting Fs. They're getting Ds and Fs, right? So let's move that needle first. Let's focus on within all veterinary practices, because I'm the grandiose vision, let's just go big or go home. Let's have all veterinary hospitals evaluate their team utilization of the veterinarian, technician, assistant, receptionist, and even the practice manager. Because I can tell you a lot of practice managers are underutilized as well. And let's give ourselves a score, a grade. Let's grade where we are in just utilization, because we know once we're utilized, we're going to have greater career satisfaction. But let's move the needle from that. I know that's a big ask, but I tend to make those big asks.
One question that I guess I would have for you as a career coach, what is a skill or something that a technician could do that would kind of put them above or over where they're already at? What's a valuable skill that they should have when they're looking for a change in their career?
Communication.
Okay.
Yes, because right now, most often, they're unable to articulate and communicate their needs within their practice.
Hmm.
All right? So one of my most read blogs from last year, and I believe it moved into an article, forgive me, I can't remember, but it was called "The Exodus of Veterinary Technicians is Because They Can't Communicate and Express Themselves."
Hmm.
Yeah, so you will find that my skills, the skills that I encourage, are all on the soft skills. The soft skills of confidence, team building, communication, leadership. Those are the skills that elevate a career. Veterinary technicians leave hospitals because of their boss. The boss could be a supervisor, the boss could be a practice manager, or the veterinarian. So it's those leaders within a veterinary hospital fully understanding how to grow qualified, credentialed, knowledgeable, trustworthy technicians and keeping them in their practices longer. We have great technicians and they're credentialed and they've got all the knowledge and they've got those skills, the medical skills and the support. But in order for them to fully succeed, they need to have a leadership team that provides them the growth and the opportunity within their practices or beyond.
That's a good point where I think we focus so much sometimes on all the anatomy and the physiology and the skills that we need as technicians. And sometimes we forget those skills, those soft skills of making sure that we are taking care of ourselves and taking care of our careers.
Yes, your skills are extremely important, and the care of that that patient is very important. But the success of your career lies within the soft skills, communication, leadership, ability to express yourself, articulate your needs. That's the juice, that's the sauce, that's where it lies. Yeah. And it's professionalism, it's common courtesy. How many times are we reading, writing out about bullying? People are asking me to put together programs right now in diversity, equality, inclusion. Well, I'm also going to be including the belonging and the professionalism piece in that. It's a holistic approach to what careers are and how to succeed in them. It's just not a pillar approach. It's a holistic approach.
Well, before we eat up more of your morning, is there anything else that we haven't discussed today that you want to get out to our listeners? Any lasting thoughts? Any great quotes that we could post on Facebook for you?
Oh, goodness, great quotes.
We always try to get a good quote out of this last question.
A quote could be that your career is in your hands, and if you don't know how to mold it, shape it, form it, or all of the options within your community, go beyond yourself. Go beyond even your veterinary hospital and find a mentor, find a coach.
Awesome.
Step into an association.
Great advice.
So that's the quote itself. But there's another one that says, you know, if you're looking for the solution within the problem, you're not going to find a solution.
That's a great one.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that so many people, when they get into that veterinary hospital, that becomes it. Not even practice managers and veterinarians have a hard time outsourcing, right? Mm-hmm. Or even for the team members, I'm an advocate for tech swaps. You guys might think, what in the hell is a tech swap? To find another hospital, I think within corporates, they should be doing tech swaps all the time. But if you're in a rural place or within a privately owned practice, find a practice that's like, you know, 60 miles away where you can do a tech swap, where you as a technician go over to this other practice, could be mixed animal, large animal, companion animal, and hang out with them for a day. You're not looking for a job. You're just looking for techniques, advancements, yeah, opportunities. And then a technician from that job, that location comes over to yours, and it builds great camaraderie.
That's great. That's a fantastic idea. Well, before we let you go, we have one final question. I'm sure you've listened to a couple of the podcasts and know you're going to get a would you rather question. Are you ready for it?
Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Okay. So would you rather be the first person on Earth or the last person on Earth?
Oh, gracious. I like to create, so I'd have to be the first. Yeah.
Well, and I guess if you were the last person on Earth, there'd be a lot of loss, right?
Yeah,
you would have to lose a lot of people.
May I invite people to my veterinary team's Living Well?
Of course.
Oh, wonderful.
We're going to have a lot of links on the show notes. So if you have links for us, we'll post them up on Facebook so that they can join you. And that was another thing I was going to ask is how can people get in touch with you? So that's a great idea.
This came out of the conversation. I never talked with Mother Teresa. I'm sure we would have had great conversations. But she once mentioned, she said, you know what? If you're going to have a protest against war, I will never be there. I will never be there. But if you have a protest for peace, sign me up. I'll be the first one to sign up for it. So when I'm creating Catalyst and I'm doing all of these things, like, I see all of the hurt, the pain, the burnout, the fatigue, the compassion fatigue and all of that. I see all that. And we have a lot of focus on that. And what I want to create, like this peace with Mother Teresa, I'm creating, and we like to involve and encourage everyone to participate in veterinary teams Living Well, because that's where we're going to find those solutions. That's where we're going to find the energy, the positivity, the connections, the collaboration in Living Well. How do we help teams live well?
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for your time today.
Yes, thank you for your time. That was great.
Yeah, we really appreciate the conversation, and hopefully it's the first of several on this topic, because as we said earlier, I don't think a whole lot of people get this kind of advice or this kind of discussion in their education, and I hope someday that changes, but it is nice to know that this kind of resource is out there for veterinary technicians. So thank you very much for your time, for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe and enjoying a cup of coffee, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. Keep it up. You're doing fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Bye, guys.
All right. Bye, caffeinators. Hey, caffeinators. We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As you guys are well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession, and we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave and I as the hosts or those opinions expressed by our guests are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, any other business or institution or any other entity with or within the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please feel free to email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. You can check out our website, vettechcafe.com. And please, whatever podcast form you're using to listen to our episodes, like us, follow us there, like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And lastly, have a great day, caffeinators. You guys are awesome. Bye, guys.